In 1947, Don Giovanni Calabria read La Lettre di Berlice, the Italian translation of C.S. Lewis's The Screwtape Letters, and he decided to write to the book's author. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, your host for the After Dinner Scholar, conversations with Wyoming Catholic College professors and friends about the great books and the liberal arts. The problem Father Giovanni faced in writing to Lewis was one of language. He spoke no English, and he had no reason to believe that Lewis knew any Italian. His solution was obvious and simple. He would simply write to Lewis in Latin. Lewis, for his part, was thrilled and wrote back in Latin. The long correspondence is available with English translations in book form. In 1947, Father Giovanni could be confident that Lewis, an educated man and scholar, could read and write, if not speak, Latin. Not anymore. While the bachelor's degree I received in 1976 was written in Latin, no one had taught Latin at my college for years. At Wyoming Catholic College, on the other hand, all students take 2 years of Latin, learning not just reading and writing, but learning conversational Latin. And I'm taking Latin with the freshmen. At the center of the program is our professor, or more properly, magister, Eugene Hamilton. Salve, Magister.
Salve et tu.
Everyone knows, he said sarcastically, that Latin is a dead language. Is it a dead language, or is something going on to revive it, or perhaps has it got a life of its own?
Well, here at Wyoming Catholic College, Latin is definitely not a dead language. It's living. Our students speak Latin. A lot of our professors speak Latin. According to a linguistic definition, I guess you could say Latin is dead in that it has ceased to change. A normal definition for language is that it changes. However, Latin is unique in that it really has stopped changing. At the fall of the Roman Empire, the Romans decided that the Latin was perfect as it was, and they didn't want to change it. There are other classical languages like this that were tied to an empire and have ceased to change. And so Latin, in a sense, is unique because we can read literature for the last 2,500 years that really hasn't changed that much. So the language we're speaking today is exactly the same language that the Romans spoke, the same language that was an international language of the Middle Ages. So by that definition, it's very much alive here at Wyoming Catholic College.
Well, it's even beyond Wyoming Catholic College. I mean, you were telling our class about your summer experience and Latin camps and adults coming to speak Latin for the week.
If you go back, say, about 50 years ago, well, let me start even further back. So in the 1500s, Latin was an international language. It was an international language of academics. It was an international language for the church. And as you progress forward to the 1600s, suddenly there are fewer and fewer speakers of the language, fewer and fewer people who really have true proficiency in the language, and that number decreased. Every year there are fewer people who spoke Latin. But starting about 20 years ago, something remarkable happened, and that number actually increased. And for the first time, there were more speakers. There were a few people who decided that they wanted to actually gain real knowledge of Latin and not have it be something that they translated in their heads and was a grammar exercise, but that Latin would live with them. So these people then went and found people who had studied Latin in a living way, a lot of people who had studied with Jesuits, for example. Not only did they learn Latin, but then they decided to teach other people. And in the last 20 years, we've seen a huge increase. So this number that every year declined, suddenly about 20 years ago, that number changed and started to increase. And we're living in an interesting juncture because we're starting to reach a critical mass of Latin speakers that we really once again have a community. We really again have people that we can speak with. And this transcends not just, this isn't just our country, but it's international. This year, there were a number of spoken Latin events, ranging from week-long immersion events to month-long immersion events. I spent about 2.5 weeks in West Virginia, of all places, speaking the language of Cicero. In Europe, it seems like every country has about two or three different full immersion events, some of which are not just small events, but last the full year. Some people are calling this a new renaissance for Latin. I kind of like the term quiet revolution myself, but a big change has taken place.
Now, let me ask you about your experience. You had plans to be a musician. What happened that you ended up studying and then teaching not just Latin, but conversational Latin?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. I was, as you say, a music major in college, and I hurt my ear and wasn't quite sure what to do with myself. So I still needed a couple of language credits to graduate, and I got excited about Latin because you didn't have to speak it, and I thought it would be easier to do Latin than the other languages. And I was used to, I was accustomed to practicing several hours a day. I was a French horn player, and many hours, personal practice and then rehearsal. And I kind of needed something to fill my time, actually. That may sound kind of strange, but I needed something, and it was Latin. So I spent hours and hours every day studying Latin and just instantly fell in love with it. And I think what catches me the most is that when I read something in Latin, I'm transcending time. I can read, I can understand something from the past, and there's no language barrier, there's no time barrier. The words that I would use to say something are exactly the same words that an author from the past would use. They're so just captured by that transcendence of language.
Interesting. Now, how does Latin fit into the integrated liberal arts curriculum at Wyoming Catholic College? Why do we teach students Latin?
Well, Latin, very much a part of Western heritage. If you go back in time, Latin was an international language. That was the language people spoke in order to communicate, much in the way that English is used in Europe today. It's a mark of being educated and being able to communicate, even functional communication. If you wanted to write something important, you were going to write in Latin because you knew the language was going to be around in another few hundred years, whereas your vernacular language was going to change. And a lot of the works that we read here were originally written in Latin. And so our students can look at them and really be a part of that larger dialogue. You know, instead of watching a PBS special and seeing it, seen about it, they can actually participate in it in the same language that it was written in and experience it for themselves.
Now, in our classes, there's a lot of action, there's a lot of repetition, a lot of funny noises and laughter, oddly enough, and very little, actually, at this point, almost no, amo, amas, amat. We haven't memorized declensions and conjugations or discussed in painful detail when to use the dative rather than the accusative. Tell us about the teaching program.
I guess we use experiential learning. Think back to the way you learned language as a small child, and you learned by doing. You got tired of pointing to something and crying that you wanted to have, and instead you eventually figured out how to say something and communicate to get what you want. And it was a whole process that you used your whole body. And you know, your mother didn't hand you a grammar book at when you turned five and okay, study up before the final test here. But it was a process that took place over many years. We do have a huge focus on grammar and a huge focus on vocabulary and reading, but it's through experience. So we learn by doing.
And overall, how do the students respond and how well do they learn?
Oh, we have amazing students here. I've been very impressed with the students' ability to pick things up and put away their expectations and learn Latin. In a few short years, they can go from knowing absolutely nothing to be able to read some classical texts. I just met with some students and we're getting ready to go on a week-long backpacking trip in Latin. And this is, for some of them, they've done it before. A couple students, this will be their third or fourth time in the backcountry, and they're looking forward to it. And for some of them, it's completely new. And one of the students asked me, well, at what point am I going to start thinking in Latin? And the answer is about the end of the second or first day, even. The idea is not that suddenly they're going to be able to speak in the way that a Roman orator would have spoke, but everything that they can say in Latin, everything, all the words that they know that are in passive knowledge through the course of this experience will become activated. And it'll be there for them. It will be real. There will not be a gap between their understanding and the word itself, which is what often can happen when we learn an ancient classical language without speaking it. We translate in our head, and we don't have real fluency. We think about the word, and then there's a gap between our understanding and our use of it. But through speaking the language, all these students on this trip will. We'll cut the gap, I guess you'd say.
And of course, we also do Latin tables at lunchtime and Thomas Aquinas Latin reading groups. Mm-hmm. I noticed advertised and even in Mass, if we're doing Latin Mass, I've been amazed that the Gospel and the Scripture readings will be done in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a real opportunity for the students.
Yeah, we have a lot of opportunities here, and I've had several students tell me that. After an immersion weekend or after some significant time in Latin, that suddenly they were able to go to Mass and understand. And they didn't need to, they stopped looking at the English part and started looking at the Latin, and it was there for them. And that's a very emotional experience for me to hear a student say that. Yeah, like as you mentioned, there, besides the outdoor backpacking trips, we do have Latin tables twice a week. The students can practice and short day trips about once a month as well.
Now, if our listeners are interested in learning some Latin themselves, where would they begin? How could you do this at home?
Well, actually, off the top of my head, if you're interested in speaking Latin, I do know of an organization, Paideia, which is based out of New York, and I think they have beginning Latin classes. One of their instructors is a former graduate of WCC. I don't know if she teaches the beginning. I think she teaches the intermediate level, but... that would be a great place to start.
And that's an online.
Yeah, it's online. You meet once a week. I think there's a textbook that you read. I think they might actually use the same textbook that we use. But
it's exciting, and it's exciting to hear students just casually chatting with one another in Latin here. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to knowing how to do that. So, gracias, Tibiago.
Limitissime. Valeas.
David McCullough. Historian and author of the 2001 biography of John Adams and the book 1776, said at one point, quote, "One of the regrets of my life is that I did not study Latin. I'm absolutely convinced, the more I understand these 18th century people, that it was that grounding in Greek and Latin that gave them their sense of the classic virtues, the classic ideals of honor, virtue, the good society, and their historic examples of what they could try to live up to." Close quote. Well, that observation alone is good reason to teach Latin to our children, even if we never learn it ourselves. Thank you for listening to the After Dinner Scholar. If you'd be willing to write a review of our podcast at iTunes, we would say with great feeling, gracias vobis ago. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.